This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 20, 2024 in Arthur, Illinois.
We do have a good one to get started here, so I'm going to read the question, and then in this one, why this one pertains to Paul, so we'll let him speak into it. It says, question for Paul Peachy. Did the relationship work out between the timid young man and your daughter?
Yes, it did. They love each other very much.
Good question, yeah. I thought about that too when he was saying that. I wonder what happened with him, so... So I'm gonna be jumping around. The speakers all have copies of these. They may not be in the order I have them, but I'm gonna read it. Okay, this one pertains to Leon. And the question is, please explain the letter sending to 10 people only 9 times. He was referring to the chain letter. Okay, there's one down here. Yeah, give him that mic here.
So if I understood that question correctly, the 9 times is the cycles of letter sending. So the first sending, if there are 10 people sending it to 10 individuals, how many will that be the first time sent? 100. How many will it be the second time?
1,000.
1,000. How many will it be the third time?
10,000.
And the fourth time? 100,000. And the fifth time?
Million.
A million. And the sixth time?
10 million.
10 million. And the seventh time?
100 million.
100 million. And the eighth time? And the ninth time?
National debt.
Anything else?
That answered the question. I think we see where it's going. So go ahead. You have any more to say on that?
So mathematically, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Mathematics do not work with any kind of chain letter ever without deceiving the masses, because what the first person is promised can never be fulfilled mathematically. Now, if there's a chain letter that's not that style and it's something different, then I need to look at the criteria that it's asking to see, because I don't like to promise all these people something that will never ever be filled, because that to me is fraud or lying or deception or whatever that's called.
Yes, and it's a good thought. I mean, the chain letters, you know, technical part of a chain letter, I think, is illegal. So I'd err on the cautious side of it. And I think the best place for them is to stop them, because you do make somebody feel guilty when they show up in your mailbox. And any more thoughts on that? Any of you others have anything to share on that?
Well, the best thing you can do is try and help your child, because that's usually where it comes from, or some recipe deal, or cookbooks, and you name it. Women get involved in it too. But if you can help go backwards and give some, just a couple kind questions to see if they really want to be involved in something that is absolutely impossible.
The next question is, should alms or charitable contributions be deducted from our taxable income? I'll read it again here. Should alms or charitable contributions be deducted from our taxable income? Any of you have any thoughts on that?
I do.
Okay, go ahead. Yes, that's...
The question is a very interesting question, but let's go back to why are they deductible? Why does the government allow them as a deduction? If you look at it from the government's perspective, they consider the cost of maintaining peoples in their jurisdiction has a certain value to it. If this group I'm looking at here today takes care of its own, they are willing to be favorable to this type of people because they do not incur a big deficit into the government, you know, with, let's say, nursing homes and Social Security or whatever all the reasons are. So it is given to us as a favor. I think we should think about the Pilgrim versus the Spanish thing that... Whoever brought that up this morning was a perfect illustration, and I think that should help temper our answer to this question.
Anybody else? Paul or Wilson, if you have anything to speak. Do you have any thoughts? Yes, go ahead, Paul. Yeah, he's got a mic here. Yeah, just leave that one down there.
I think the answer is yes. For myself, I feel that it's something that the government has allowed us. We take depreciation schedules, and we take to where we can take a contribution deducted from our taxes. If you look at it from a stewardship standpoint, I would much rather have that money saved and give more than I would give it not figured and give it to the federal government. So I support in that point, but I'm not critical of one that doesn't. Now, some of my good friends that I know do contribute and don't hand it in. So I'm not judgmental whatsoever, but I myself personally feel it's a great advantage from the IRS.
Yes, I agree with that. There was a thought that was shared, and I'll just share that, and I'm agreed with this. The question was, should it still be called alms? A charitable deduction, or a charitable contribution, yes, but maybe alms, we'll leave it up to each person's discretion. You know, how do we feel about that? But yeah, I'm agreed with that. If we can keep it within the community, yes. That's the next question, Leon Martin. What is business, was it USP?
USP is another acronym for Unique Selling Proposition. Some people have a USV, and I forget what the V is for. But anyway, it's the unique selling proposition. It's some little cliche or a catch phrase about our business. Mine was for about 30 years, neighbor to neighbor, bumper to bumper. I know another guy, he told me one, said, what's your USP? We make the sparks fly. He was a welder. I'm not saying that's a good one. I'm just saying there should be something that's just somewhere from 3 to 10 words that can constitute your USP.
Like a tagline. Like a tagline.
Yeah, tagline. That's right. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That's actually the old name, tagline. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a tagline. That's what it is. Things go better with Coke is actually their tagline. And when it rains, it pours. Anybody know what that is? Are you old enough? Morton Salt. All the grunting around me back here because we're the right age. But I don't know if the rest of you see that on the Morton. I don't even know if they. I don't know what women buy. Do they buy Morton Salt? I don't even know.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? How do we avoid cream puff children? I guess that goes to Paul. I think he had that in his topic. We'll let him speak into that, maybe the others. How do we avoid cream puff children?
Well, I think, first of all, Daddy sets the example of bearing personal responsibility. But when the children are young, if they're taught to feed their calves and they're responsible to gather the eggs, it starts at a very young age. But as the boys get older and they come out of school and they come into business, you can start making them responsible. Like we have a man that comes in once a week and picks up the gang saw blades. And it was something that one of the boys could make sure that it was always ready when he came on Tuesday at lunchtime, that the blades were packaged and ready for the man to pick up. But given some personal responsibility and letting it grow as they get older and gives them a sense of accomplishment and approval, I think it's so important that we express approval to our children when they do well, and it gives them a desire to grow more into it. That's what I had a little bit of in mind. I just don't like it when our young people are growing up and they're not given some sort of sense of responsibility and accountability.
Anyone of you others have anything to speak into that? Anything to share on that, Paul?
It's as simple as if they do something good for you, show them appreciation. It goes a long ways. They can tell it just by your actions. One way or another.
You have anything, Ernest?
We are taught and trained to learn the two-letter word early on. It's called N-O. It's amazing how much accent we put on that as parents. So by nature, it's unfortunate, but by nature, most of us are trained to think negative because of that. I'm not saying there's a place to not teach no, but there is definitely a place to teach yes and to commend. When we commend our children in front of our families, and if they need to be reprimanded, that should be done in private. And if we keep that principle in mind, it will go a long way in helping us have that 14-year-old that makes the right choice when the right time comes. We have everything included, even giving directions. I hear it all the time. Yeah, you go down there to the stoplight and turn left, and go down to the next stoplight and turn right. No, just go down to the go light and turn right, and then go to the next go light and turn left. If nobody ever goes there, they're still parked.
Well, you know, I agree with exactly what Paul and those were saying and sharing. And I think the nature of, you know, appreciation versus intimidation goes a long ways, keeping them involved. But there's another part. I had a discussion with an older gentleman in the community some time ago. We were discussing this about, okay, as business founders, you know, we worked hard, you know, worked through some long hours and building the business. And our children come along, we tend to want to make it too easy for them. You know, so sometimes it's our own fault. So I think it's something to really think about. And when I think of it, I mean, we like to help them out. We want to make it easy. But, you know, when Dorothy and I started our business, our parents were concerned, but we chopped it through on our own. And it's okay. We were okay with that. We didn't have to go ask them for help, and maybe we should have. But, you know, it was a good experience for us. You know, we learned a lot by doing that. You know, so, and sometimes we think back in those pains, and we're like, we'd like to spare our children of that, but I'm not sure we should. You know, there's a value that goes with that. So, anyway, that's the next question, and this kind of ties into this, but it says it's not a question, but maybe more of a discussion. It says, how do you help a business owner who's struggling financially and doesn't ask for help? How is it possible for a business to end up at the brink of bankruptcy in a community setting like we have? What is the responsibility of the community? Should I read that again? I can't, just think about it. How do you help a business owner who's struggling financially and doesn't ask for help? How is it possible for a business to end up at the brink of bankruptcy in a community setting like we have? What is the responsibility of the community? First of all, my thought is, it's hard to help when they don't ask. But I'd like to hear some thoughts on this. So, go ahead, Ernest.
One of the things I would say is, it is hard to help if they don't ask. However, as a community, if we set the stage that the people who do fail are the laughingstock, if we are known as people, when we hear something negative, that we're a lot faster to pass it on than something positive, don't be surprised if that individual doesn't want to talk to you. If we have our eyes open, sometimes we can see stress cracks appear. I can talk to you all about the stress crack, but if I go to him and I say, "No, brother, I'm worried. Is there something? I mean, just fill me in here." And then you make sure you do not destroy his confidence. You can build a relationship. And I know it's hard to help somebody that doesn't ask. But if we are at all guilty of letting rumor mills and gossip mills run, don't expect people to ask.
My mind went to a gentleman that was part of a brotherhood of a friend of mine. And it was a little difficult to get along with. He had caused some brotherhood struggles. They were struggling in his marriage. He wasn't doing well in his business. And they finally convinced him to go to get some counseling. And they went first started with a marriage counselor. And this gentleman came and told my friend, he said, "It didn't take me long to wise up to that old guy." He said he charged me $250 an hour to tell me I'm part of the problem. Those are very difficult type of people to break through to, but so often when we are in a situation, we don't see it. So I guess the first part is, if we can somehow befriend our brother or our friend and show that we really, really care, and then to try and get him to maybe see the air.
You have any thoughts?
So I can testify to that same effect, that I tried to help a man one time that had, I felt, an inordinate affection to credit cards. And so I asked him if he would be willing to just lay it all out in front of him and his wife, and I took another brother with me. And we did. At his kitchen table, we just laid everything out. And to the shock, I mean complete shock, his wife had no idea. He had 30 credit cards totally choked up, paying minimum payments on all of them. I took 29 of those cards with me that night, a big rubber band, stacked them away, and we went into there in that family event and helped him get control of it. Several of us brethren got together and did that, and he's a good friend of mine yet to this day. I just talked to him yesterday. He doesn't live in this state, not even close to this place, but he's doing well financially. He's okay. He kind of learned his hard lesson.
Well, my thoughts go, you know, as men, or sometimes we're hard to break down. We're machos, you know, we don't like to be losers, and it's a defeated feeling. And I guess my suggestion is, or my passion is, if you can't feel compassion for that person, don't try to help him, because that's the important key. That's just exactly what Ernest was saying. So my encouragement is, if there's somebody in here that needs help, there are people around, and for us others, I guess, you know, it's good to show that we care. And do we show enough that he knows we care? Next question or comment is, I want to market my products to an entire town. Leon, do you advocate cold calling and knocking on every door rather than doing an every door direct mail campaign?
So the question is, what is being sold? If I know that it's an $8,000 piece versus an $8 piece, my answer would be totally different. So since I'm not aware, the question asker, whoever asked this question, I do not know what the object is that I'm trying to sell. So I would say you need to do a cost analysis of the direct mail campaign, which is called the shotgun mailing. And if you take a shotgun and shoot it into the air, you might get a sparrow. Maybe, but maybe not. But you might get two or three. Is that going to be enough to pay for the shell and the time to do it? So it's a little bit of that. I'm low on recommending, what do they call it here, direct mail campaigns. Direct mail campaigns can be great. They really work well if you do them all yourself, if they're all in your envelopes, if it is a sales envelope, or if it is a marketing card, if it's a little larger than the normal marketing mail, or if it's put into a newspaper, sometimes that can work too, if it's a flyer. There are good ways that it does work. So, again, I don't know enough of information to give an accurate answer.
The next comment is, on the subject of owe no man anything, would that mean don't borrow more than you are worth in collateral? I'll read it again. On the subject of owe no man anything, would that mean don't borrow more than you are worth in collateral? Go ahead, Ernest.
Well, I think that is definitely a safe position. If you borrow more than you're worth on collateral, if you make your payment every month when that comes due, then you do owe no man anything. If he agreed to loan you the money, or if the organization agreed to loan you the money, and you make your payment every month on time, then you're fulfilling that scripture of owing no man anything.
you've met your obligation.
I agree with you partially there, but can you help me out with the worth and collateral? Because that really is not addressed with your answer.
Oh, wouldn't this, if I study this, I mean, we talked about this briefly. Okay, my thought goes, if I'm the lender and I know that's his position and I'm agreed to do it and I lend it to him and he agrees to the payment and he's making that, is that right. That's my take on the question. Maybe I'm wrong.
And I think that was the question, that sometimes this, oh, no man, anything is used to say you shouldn't borrow money. So I was addressing that issue. Now, Leon is ready to address that borrowing beyond your net worth.
Well, the simple answer is, would that mean don't borrow more than you are worth in collateral? Yes, that's what it means. That's the simple answer. Now, what Laverne just said here, if he's willing to invest in this person and consider it his own project, and he's taking the brother by the hand, so to speak, and he's going to make this thing offset for collateral, and he's good with that, that's a different story. And I would support that.
Helping out in time of need. And that leads us to this next question, which is almost like a double question, but what are the biblical standards to use on accounts receivable? What measures should be used to keep it from getting to that point? The person that had this question actually came up and he said he wants to explain it so we understand it. And the question is, if you're in the business, whether you're doing lawnmowers or selling food, and somebody comes up and they charge it and they keep charging it and they get way behind, maybe it's horse feed or whatever, should you cut them off and say, no, you're over so much and we can't bring you any more horse feed or any more gas until you get paid up? The question is, what is our position as a business owner? What should we do? Somebody.
I can't hardly sit still on that one. So, why did you ever start it? Why do you start accounts receivable? There is a place for accounts receivable, but it's really rare. Where you have a fleet of vehicles and lots of different drivers, and it wouldn't be reasonable to pay for every service. Maybe every 30 days is a good time. And there's other businesses like that, that once a month seems like a good time. We have borrowed this concept from the world when they taught this thing back in the 5 and 10 cent stores way back when, and I think it goes back into the 30s or 40s when they started this charge it thing. It might have been the 50s. But it's a trap that we have left ourselves get into. How many people here want to start a new business and then have that as the criteria for the finances? Does it make sense? Say no. Okay.
There are some businesses, for example, you get in the farming where you have maybe a monthly check or a bi-monthly check, and so you have feed delivered, and there is, it's virtually impossible not to run an account there. Now, one of the things, though, that I have failed in many years ago is I didn't charge interest. I was the kind business owner that didn't charge interest. You know, I did not do my customers one favor because I was not a bank. But I acted like a bank. I acted like a really neat bank. And guess who didn't get paid? And so it is the right thing to do, that if they are borrowing money from us, which that's what an account is, we do charge interest. And when I don't charge interest on an outstanding account, I am giving them a false sense of reality.
So I'll continue that just a slight bit. About 30 years ago, I got this big sign posted in my office. Attention, we have a working agreement with the bank. They don't fix cars, and we don't lend money.
I guess there's another side to this that I'd like to leave with everybody. A couple of questions. One is, I think Ernest shared that a little bit, or Leon, do we understand what an open account really is, what that means? The agreement is not that we can go until we pay it. It's we agree to pay within the terms. And I think it's something that kind of gets lost in the weeds. But more importantly to me is this really shouldn't be the business owner's problem. You know, we have people out there that are struggling that can't pay their horse feed or their gas or whatever, cutting them off. That hurts me to think that we have to do that. You know, isn't there somebody that can go to them and tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, let's get some help. There's a much better life to live than living like this. You know, it burdens me to think that we have people that live in that kind of bondage. And there is hope beyond that. And that's my thought, you know. And we, a couple of us talked about that. So that'd be my encouragement is, I understand we have business owners here that are struggling with this, but get somebody to help you. Let's help the people find a better day. That's, go ahead.
It's best those people to help you are not the business owners.
Yes.
Maybe that business owner would like to help one of his relatives with has the same issue, but he can't because he's not been paid. I mean, let's put all the finances where they belong and then let every man deal with that as God has given it to him so that he can help his brother. I find this a lot with, simple question. What makes you think next month you can pay? If you can't pay the horse feed now, why would you be able to next month? Are you that positive thinking that, it'll probably be better by next month? I mean, is that part of your disease?
Well, another part might be get somebody to help you understand. Maybe I've got a weakness. I got too many horses. Maybe I need to get rid of some horses. You know, what's the leading cause here? But sometime we need to identify that. That's hopefully that answers the question on that. It's or some encouragement. Work, family, church balance. Is it fair to ask someone to work most of the night on your equipment servicing? I would understand sacrificing family time so you don't have to do it. Basically, is it fair to ask someone to work most of the night servicing your equipment so you don't have to do it? You know, and that's in the service business. I know we got service people sitting in here, and I'm sure they've all got their thoughts on that. And you know, I'd like to hear some thoughts on that. It's you follow what the question is. It's I don't care, one of you.
It's a bad habit I have, grabbing the mic. So the service industry is just that. They are there for service. That is what they are. I was a 24/7 person, too, at one time. Went up and down Interstate 57 with a tow truck back in the 70s and 80s, and I did this a lot, any hour of the day. It was not like it was considered somebody asking me to do something I didn't want to do. It was all part of that job. So in this particular question, if that person that's doing the service equipment is agreed to do that by the business that's asking them to, I don't see any problem with that. That person that's doing the work, if he becomes my client, I'm going to help him try to also have family time. I'm going to try and help him schedule and keep his priorities straight. This is a service guy because I take that very personal. I want every husband and wife to have time with their children, and I want to help them have more time with their children. Usually it's what I end up doing, because most of the time it's not the other way around.
Thank you for asking that question. It brings a clarification. I agree with that on the service oriented. We have people that are on call 24/7. They've got a truck and they got a welder and a torch, and that's what they do. They do service and they take pride in it. But then they might take a week off and take their family to Florida. But if you have a brother in the church and you ask him to do something like that over and over again, then no, it doesn't work. But this was more in people that are in that line of work.
So yes, the service work, from what I understand here to sum it up, the service work, you can expect that kind of hours, but let's also encourage them to find personal time and allow them that. And I know probably about that time is when Jason wants to take off and I want him to come fix my diesel. You know, so we know how those things work. But he does have other people there, so I do encourage and support what you said, is let's try to find a balance. And I guess a reminder to myself, let's not ask them to do something that can wait. That's, let's be considerate of them. Okay, the next question is, and I might have to reword this a little bit, it's if you have the opportunity to hire some very valuable help, and the question is, if you've got quite the workload that you need to keep everybody busy, and it's extremely hard to come by with good help, and the economy talk is pointing towards dropping, we've got some ups and downs here, what is your recommendation from a young business owner? You know, if I understand it correctly, if you have the opportunity to hire some, you have a good guy who's knocking on the door, you have a chance to hire him, but your workload's a little bit soft, and you're not sure you're going to have enough to keep them all busy, and right now it's, well, the downturn might be pointing downward more than upward, is it a good idea to go ahead and hire him?
Most of the time, the answer is yes. So I don't know what size this business is. I don't know what percentage this one more man is. Is he 50% more of the labor factor, or is he another 10% of the labor? I don't know because I don't know how many are working there. But most of the time, if the business is young and it's starting to increase, maybe he needs to talk marketing so that he doesn't need to talk this question.
But I also agree with, who was that, when you talked about when you hire somebody, especially if it's a smaller business from a young business owner, it might double his workload, might, you know, his management, you know, so all those things are valuable things to consider. Go ahead, Ernest.
Right. And if you have a very valuable person like that, my answer would be yes, too, because that employee will more than pay for himself. Mm-hmm. He's going to generate more wealth than what it just takes to take home. And maybe he is only one-tenth of the workforce, but he might help pay some of their, some of what it takes. So, and that depends, again, on the business. If it's a service business and a business that is a required business, if it's something that's dealing with just high-end luxury products that an economic downturn is going to have a bigger impact on, then maybe you consider it more seriously, do I not? But I would say on a normal business, on a service-oriented business, a good man, you better snap him up.
What you're saying is the type of business might make more of a difference if it's a good idea or not. Yep. Okay, this is for Leon Martin, and I think this has been partially covered, but I'll just read it. Unethical marketing, what about chain letters for charitable cause? What should you do if you get them? I guess we didn't address that, what to do with them. You want to speak to that?
The math is not changed for charitable or for thievery. It doesn't change its platform. So I don't know what a charitable cause is with a chain letter without looking at the letter. If it can be fulfilled in a Christian way and nobody gets deceived and nobody gets the short end of the stick and everybody's the promises is fulfilled, then it's okay. But if it means 95% of all the people that are going to be doing the chain letter get nothing or little to nothing, and a few do because it was a religious, upright thing, it doesn't sound ethical to me.
Okay, the next one is, Paul Yoder talked about the businessman being motivated by the love of recognition, like the Iranian car ex owners whose dad told him he would never amount to anything. Any thoughts on overcoming that?
Repent. Turn around. Give God the glory. Thank Him that He opened up your eyes. There is a better way. And I'm on your side. And if you tell me who you are, I'll be praying for you. It's not an easy thing, but it can be done. With God, all things are possible.
And remember, we have a God that says multiple times that He will be a father to the fatherless.
I would like to suggest one more thing yet, because the word overcoming that, those two words in this question, any thoughts on overcoming that? Those people have an internal struggle with lots of flashbacks, and they have lots of emotional stresses and trauma in the brain, and the neurology scientists and everybody else it's heavy to get that turnaround. Repentance, yes, absolutely, it's the best answer. However, I'm going to suggest to that person, remember the windshield and the rearview mirror. Those numbers don't lie. If you focus on the 97%, that's called future, and all the opportunities you have, and do not study the rearview mirror, you will run off the road.
Try to become a better father than your father was, right? That's, I mean, if that's the hurts you have, well, let's not focus on his shortcomings. Number two is, what should be our motivation to grow and improve our business? Our businesses. What should be our motivation to grow and improve our businesses? It's kind of a broad question.
Well, we're called to serve. If we are a employee, we are called to serve our employer as God, not unto man. And so if we truly surrender our business to God, and realize as there in Miller's book, it's not your business. We're caretakers. And if we want our business to succeed, we realize it's not our business. It's his. It is God's. Everything we have is given to us by God. And he says, be good stewards.
Okay, the last one I have here on the note from this one is, says Paul Peachey's notes say, are you moving away from fear or are you moving towards something you love? I would welcome more discussion on that. It says, are you moving away from fear or are you moving towards something you love? You want to speak into that, Paul? That's got some notes there to share.
I have 2 points on that. One is business and one is family relationships. In 93, I bought into a company and I was very deep in debt and I owed most of the balance to a brother in the church. He wanted to move and he came to me and he offered his share and he offered to finance it. And I was scared spitless. I mean, I run for all I could for fear of failure. And I remember one time it was tight and I could hardly make my payment and I went up to him and I said, brother, I'm struggling, I'm a little tight. I said, I can't hardly make my monthly payment. And he set his lower jaw and he looked me right in the eye and he said, Paul, I want my money. And it created a almost to where you would run from fear rather than something that you love to do. I have a saying that I use a lot, that passion begets passion. When you really have love for something that you do well at it. Second, when it comes to relationship, my father is deceased. He was a good daddy, but he struggled with anger. We grew up with anger, and it's devastating to a home and to a family. He pled for forgiveness. On his knees, Mom told me he pled over and over for forgiveness for how he treated some of his older children. When I had my young son, and I looked down into his dear little eyes, I, for a while, run from fear. I was scared so bad I would not be able to connect with my son that I run from fear. But look into that dear young man's eyes. Love him dearly. Love your son. Talk to him when he's still in the womb. Use tenderness to his mother. It goes a long way when you operate in love versus fear.
I know we're running out of time. It's getting close to closing here. A couple more things. This is a question for Paul Miller. Paul can answer this. The question was raised on your little logo with AF. It's got the plow in front of it. The question was, what does the plow stand for? How did you come up with the plow? There he is, Paul. Any quick thoughts on that? Leon, you can be thinking about this while he's getting ready. Somebody asked if you would do a 15-second elevator speech. Just a minute. Let Paul do this first.
Okay, that is a good question. The plow represents we are people of the earth and that nothing happens until, like, movement happens. And so you put the plow on the earth, and that doesn't do anything until the plow moves. And so there's nothing like deep and theological about it. It was just something that seemed appropriate to the founders when Anabaptist Financial was started. But it does represent that nothing happens until the plow moves.
Good question. Good answer. Okay, so we'll turn it over to Leon. You also wanted to share something about the word after.
I probably should do that first, and then I'll do the elevator speech. No, I'll do it the other way around. So the elevator speech, I make one up here. Introducing Equine Guard Immune Boost, a revolutionary mineral mix meticulously crafted to enhance your horse's well-being. Our expertly formulated blend combines essential minerals known for bolstering immunity, preventing early diseases, and promoting overall health. Conveniently packaged in easy-to-use capsules or granules, Equine Guard makes it simple to integrate into your horse's daily feed. Elevate your horse's vitality with Equine Boost Immune Boost, because a healthy horse is a happy horse.
Did you read it off your tablet?
Yes, I read it off my tablet.
That was a long elevator ride.
When you looked up, they were all gone, right?
Yeah. That was a 10-story building. So the most important slide I did not put up, and it's called after. I got to tell you, if you can just forget everything I said today and don't remember a thing, but just remember what I'm going to tell you now, it'll be worth more than everything else I said. Whatever is done after the transaction is complete is the most memorable and the most appreciated and the most honorable thing that you can do with a customer. It doesn't matter who your customer is. All that matters is what you do after money is transacted. When money is transacted, it's like all the stress is gone. Customer has zero stress. And now you're coming after this customer and said, oh, yeah, by the way, I'd like to offer you this. Oh, yeah, and by the way, here, what about this? You know, or 3 days from now, you call that customer and you thank them for the trust that they gave you, not their business. Thank them for their trust. And you just appreciate that they came by to see you or whatever, and you thank them for that, whatever you did to them, products or service. After that, if about every 30 days, pardon me, it's 3 days and then possibly in a 30 days, depending what the sale is. If it's a mini barn, yes, do it like this. If it's pies or cookies, no, you're not going to call them and go after that. It's more of a sizable purchase. Or if it's something in the service world, the hydraulic hose you just made for that person, call them 3 days, see if it all worked out good and it's still dry. If it is a lawnmower repair, or if it is, you name it. Most of the services that are done by this group in here need to be followed up in 3 days. That step alone, if you start doing that, will do more transformation for your marketing than you can imagine.
Okay, well, I know it's getting it's closing time here. There's a couple more thoughts. One was that, and I'll just share a little bit, Willis Miller, a lot of us locals know that Willis has been very successful, and we respect that in a good way. And it'd be interesting if we had time to let him share some stories. I can still remember vividly the night I woke up, and I heard some trucks and heard some noise. We pulled the curtain back. We were living there, what used to be the Obichup place, and there was this big fire going over what used to be Coach House Garages. His shop burnt to the ground. You know, Willie's been down some paths that some of us have not been. It's not always been easy. I think he's worked hard, and yet he's persevered. And I'd love to have him share some stories, but I think we're going to leave it with that. And there's a couple things I'd want to, you know, I'd like to close with. You know, when I come to places like this, you know, things like days like today help me shape my mind. I keep thinking about hearing some of these things, and it's, you know, I also have to think at the closing. And in John 15, I think John writes has a lot of good quotes. And one is, he says on John 15:22, it says, if I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not their sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. They didn't know it, but now they know it. Today, we've been told a lot of things, we've shared a lot of things, now we know it. We can't go home ignorantly saying, I didn't know that. So there's been a lot of good things shared. So, and what I want to leave you with is, I like that. There's a verse in John 14. It says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." If we're struggling out there, look for help. It's worth it. It's a and a couple things yet. Remove your name tags. You can leave them on the table. The lanyards, just leave them on the table. Don't forget your comment sheets in the back. You know, we have the green sheets. We have the blue sheet. You know, the green sheets, we'd like for you to leave those. You can either turn it upside down or hand it to the girls in the back there. Feel free to stop by the resource table. I think they got a lot of that packed up because they're heading south. But thanks again for attending. We really appreciate everybody taking time and being with us. So God bless you, and thanks for coming. Have a safe trip.